Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock on the West Coast, and we are working our way through the ABD, the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold, and we've taken on an incredible task here. Not only have we taken on the task of working with the book, but we're actually putting it into a different context, Ivan, and you've been involved with this book for 40 years now. In the early
74. 70s. Yeah, well, it was first published in 73 and 74.
And so we're talking about 40 years. And what we're doing now, the book has been used extensively by the Labyrinth Readers Society. And in the Labyrinth Readers Society, people work with the book, and when people are in transit, when someone has died, they'll read to the Voyager. What we're trying to do this time, we're taking the position, we're investigating the position, that what we have here is a manual for the Voyager as well, and that we are the Voyager. So in a case like that, what we're trying to do is we're trying to, what hints does this volume give us? Now, this volume, as we talked about in the first, this is our 21st class, Ivan.
21st class. Really
in the first
along.
Few classes, we spoke quite a bit, actually, about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, its legacy, and how over the years, over the millennia, actually, the various people have picked it up, and in my opinion, one of the last ones to do so, the one we're specifically talking about is E.J. Gold and how he converted it into more of the American dialogue. If you read the actual Tibetan book, and there's a great translation, it was actually the Dalai Lama asked a number of people to work on it. It was headed by his own personal translator. And Graham, I can't remember his first name, Coleman Graham. No, that's not right. Anyway, that came out a few years ago, the Tibet Book of the Dead, latest translation. And if you read that document as a non-Tibetan and you don't know the technical language of those individuals, it's almost unreadable. It's if you've worked with it a little bit, it does. No, Evans Lentz was in the 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was, I think he did a terrific job of bringing it to the West. But there have been a number of translations since then, and the latest being this one by the Dalai Lama's team. And it's called, you know, it's the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Is that one that Robert Thurman was involved with?
No. Thurman also did an earlier one. He did one in the 80s.
Yeah.
But the Dalai Lama's, I think, came out 09, maybe, 10.
Yeah, well, I have the idea. I haven't actually compared all those translations, but I have the idea that there was one done by, I think it was a woman named Fremantle, working with Shogyam Trungpa.
Francesca Fremantle was a student of Trungpa, and she came out with a translation in the 70s with Trungpa of parts of the Tibet Book of the Dead. Mm. Happened to turn out that she was an absolute scholar of the Tibetan language and of all the Tibetan and Buddhist and Hindu texts. Mm. And then she later came out with her own text on it that expanded the work that she did with Trungpa, and she points to Trungpa extensively.
Well, I was going to say that I think that there, you know, over the years since the 70s, I have the impression that there have been translations done that are more useful, that are more, effective to be read aloud in English, you know, that work better. But, you know, the fact was that this is one of the things that I do remember from 73, 74, when E.J., you know, was first working on this text of American Book of the Dead, he, you know, in large part, I mean, he was responding to this issue that it was impossible to use the Evans Ones text to do readings, to actually do readings, because it was very literal, and it had all these $27 words that were not, you know, names and other things, concepts that were not translatable from Tibetan, and, you know, half the pages would be taken up with footnotes, scholarly footnotes, and it was just not a text for reading aloud. In English, it didn't sound anything like a, you know, it really didn't sound like a sacred text. So EJ's response to that was to create this transformation of the text into the American Book of the Dead.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's very, I think it's obvious, actually. It's hardly possible that these other later translators were not aware of EJ's book. You know,
they are aware. They were.
Yeah, I mean, of this idea of creating a text that is mantram, is has the resonance of sound in English.
Yeah.
Because that's the purpose of the reading.
George, you might help me with the title of this. Trungpa came out with another book, Transcending Madness, I think it is.
Yep.
Is that the name of it?
I'm holding it right here on my lap, Transcending Madness, The Experience of the Six Bardos by Trungpa.
So Trungpa, and the book Transcending Madness is actually a workshop that he gave.
Right, two different workshops.
You give a talk. For, you know, for a couple of hours, and then students would ask him questions of the, you know, the six this various realms and things like that. The point being is that, you know, there's a number of ways to look at it. In the space itself, what Francesca Freemantle talks about in her book,
the title of her book, can you look it up, Francesca Freemantle?
No.
Click on her name. Luminous Emanations, is that it?
Luminous Emptiness. She goes into a great deal of discussion of the background of it. Okay, so right now, today, we're going to start walking into the seventh chamber. The seventh chamber is dictated by, indicated by E.J. Gold in the American Book of the Dead. Now, there's a number of ways to look at that. There's what's called the seventh chamber. Well, Francesca Freemantle says that that has to do with a particular deity's presence. And then they name that deity, and they name the correlations to that, and so on and so forth. But what we're, and what I think EJ did, it's very valuable to us, and part of the work where I'm hoping to do today with, in our class here, it's not a deity as so much in terms of our presentation, our understanding. It's a set of forces that occur. And part of our job is to learn to discern those forces.
Right.
I kept saying, I was hoping that Harry was on tonight, but it looks like he's not on.
Right.
He's traveling is what it looks like. Is Susan or?
Yes, I'm Susan. Here.
Yeah, hi, Susan. Greetings.
Hi, here.
I listened to the recording of last week's talk.
I was going to make a suggestion that I thought that something very valuable that we conveyed, you know, by Pat's presentation here on the
fourth,
five, and six,
particularly the fourth chamber.
It was regarding the what I was thinking of as the rhetoric of the text of the, you know, the way that EJ has presented, you know, the idea that these longer readings for these chambers are the template. They give the format and the template that's going to be used for the entire 49 days, for the remainder of the 49 days. And, you know, maybe you could ask somebody to review that, what was the essence of what she said there, and summarize it.
So basically what Ivan's telling us and what Pat was instructing us last time is that that fourth chamber, it's important to go ahead and reread that and reread it. It's a reference chamber. Mm-hmm. And it'll reference how we look about us. But that's not the point I wanted to investigate tonight. I do want us to get into the seventh chamber. It'll take us 2 or 3 weeks to get through it, and then 8 and 9 will follow. 8, 9, 10 will follow right behind it. But I remember hearing, and I think, Susan, you might have been part of this with Harry. I think you were reading to him or he was reading to you or something like that. And he said something along the lines, I asked her to slow down. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Okay.
But not now, in the middle of the reading. We waited till the end, and then he gave me feedback.
Good. Now, what I wanted to ask Harry, and I wanted to get into under his skin on this one because he's someone that I can do that with, why did he want you to slow down?
He wanted me to slow down so that he could really feel the words and have the space to
internalize,
digest it.
What's
internalize
that?
It.
Silverdale?
I said internalize the vibration of the words being used.
Now, this is not a rhetorical question. Why did he want that?
Because if he's out there in the Bardos, this is his lifeline, and he would want the space to be able to fully grok it or understand it.
Okay.
The instructions that are being given.
So there are instructions being given, and in a sense, I don't know what you were reading together, but
we were doing the chambers 4, 5, and 6. Actually, started from the beginning of the reading.
Excellent.
And went all the way through 6.
So, both you and Silverdale said this word, internalize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you know, my challenge to all of us, and me included, is why? And Susan's answer is
well,
because when he's in the Bardos, he wants to know the instruction or something like that.
Yeah, to be sure to get it.
To be sure to get it.
I thought that's what he was about.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, to get it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's the beginning of where I want to start then. What does it mean to get it then, Ivan?
Well, I would just like to say that what I remember, what really impressed me about what Harry was saying was that in the Voyager state, in the expanded state.
Let me underline what Ivan is just saying. In the Voyager state.
In the Voyager state, receiving those instructions, I think that he said that he experienced, working with this Susan's reading, he experienced that there was a space around the words, that the words were invoking a certain space, and that indeed, as a Voyager, he didn't want to rush through and have it go like this or something like that, because every word and phrase
because
every word and phrase was radiating something.
Was important to him.
Yeah, well, it was radiating that atmosphere and the information of
he
that
chamber.
He wanted
to know the data of how to operate in that chamber.
Yeah.
Right? Because if he can have a sense of the data that is available to him in that chamber,
mm-hmm.
then he might know what to do.
Yeah, this is what Pat talked about, actually.
Okay?
Yeah.
So he might know what to do. We might know what to do. Now, let's just flip it a second here. And my viewpoint on this particular book is that this is a manual for us. We are the living. You know, some of us, anyway, here, kind of look around. Okay, well, maybe not that many, but...
Is that a wiseacre? Okay.
Are somewhat alive.
We'll pass on that.
And so, when we read, do not ask for whom the bell tolls, because it does toll for thee. That's the context. This is 49 different chambers of nuances of what the various parts of the labyrinth are. Okay? It's nuances that will and do occur. Now, can you, as a voyager, as Ivan's telling us, as a voyager, can you recognize when you are in that particular state? Well, the first thing you have to ask yourself, well, what particular state? So you have to learn this data and the nuances of the labyrinth voyaging to know when it might be important and effective for you to know what state you're in. Where am I right now?
Yeah.
And we did this experiment several weeks ago where I think I had, I think it was either you or Pat, I can't remember right now, just arbitrarily, it was you, arbitrarily opened the book
right.
to a chamber and you read it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And it just was bang on for where we were at the moment. So now we walk into these areas. These next three chambers in particular, 7, 8, and 9, are describing very vivid, very specific events. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say something that I don't... Here's what I think is the issue. I think that if we can become effective voyager travelers, in the PAWS class this morning came up the concept of apprentice, journeyman, and master. We're not masters. We're beginners, and you know, occasionally we poke our head into the areas where we might be considered a journeyman. Okay? What if, as a voyager, suddenly you recognize a space, and you look around you, and you are schooled enough, which some people are, you're schooled enough to say, having thus confronted the visions of the labyrinth, however weak my attention may have been until now, I ought to have gained liberation by now. Unless my abilities towards higher development may be so lacking that I am unable so far to recognize reality. Obscurations from desire and stinginess may well have placed me in a condition of helplessness and awe, too weak to resist the urge to hide from the rumbling, grinding sounds and harsh dissolving radiations. If that has been the case, so if I am obscured, right, then the visage of the element fire, along with the soft yellow light of the dimension inhabited by the hungry ghosts proceeding from greediness and insatiable hunger for things, attachments to objects and possessiveness towards accumulation will form upon the face of the beloved. In all of this, we're reminded, and we will be reminded when we get to the rest of the reading of this chamber, where does this come from? Where do these visions and illusions come from? Actually, they come from us. They take the form that is us. So if you see yourself, suddenly you see yourself in the hungry ghost mode, and you see all these people into acquisitions and things like that. Where does that come from? Where is that proceeding from? Now, it's a fine line, because sometimes you're in that chamber as the voyager, not dominated by the chamber and the hungry ghost mode as Tantalus was. You are in the chamber. Maybe you're there to do something.
Interesting that you should say this. This is like, I was talking last week about being at the Javits Center at the Book Expo, and that's very much the realm. You know, it's very much the hungry ghost world, because it's all about commerce and publicity and marketing and everybody trying to get somebody else's attention and so on. But then it really is true that if I had an appointment and sometimes a chance meeting, if I would sit down with someone across a table and we actually were introducing one another and having a conversation, this was something much more like the human world. It was like stepping out of
the human realm is, but
yeah.
But right now we're talking about the hungry ghost realm that
yeah.
you were in. So maybe from time to time we wind up like Ivan was at the Javits Center. He suddenly, the events occurred, the currents of karma, in a sense, put him in touch with a particular person. And suddenly he was there able to transmit something.
Right.
I guarantee you, I wonder, well, why am I in New York and stuff? Okay, people go, oh, did you have a good time in New York? Well, I did have a good time, but that's not how I viewed it. Okay? When I got there, I had a series of events that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I was there for specific reasons to do certain specific things. And while I was holding my eyes open for that, I was able to see some of those events come right before me. And at that point, we're called upon then to transmit something, maybe a phrase,
mm-hmm.
maybe a glance, a helping hand. It might be a smile that nobody ever gave to somebody else in that moment. It might be a no.
Sure.
Do we have any comments, Susan?
We have a couple.
Okay.
Simon said earlier that it doesn't matter if you understand his writings in the ABD, then wouldn't it be the same if it was in another language? Essentially, the self will understand? Is that the question?
It's a good question, and it's a question that I think that is truly it's designed for the Labyrinth Readers course. My answer to that, Simon, is what is language other than a vibrational effect that you are giving to the recipient? When we speak, we're transmitting vibrations through the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a program on my tablet that automatically translates back and forth. I click this, it's Google Translate, but it's got a voice function to it. I can speak in English and then I touch it and it'll say it in Spanish. Then the person in Spanish can say something and I can touch it and it'll say it in English. So it depends on the vibrational signature that the reader will give, Simon. So if you're in a particular vibratory place, that's what you're transmitting. Right? Does that make sense?
There's
go ahead.
108 repetitions. This pathology shaft rotates when it's dead. What is the difference, dead or alive?
Well, that's part of what we're doing here, is trying to, in a certain way, we're saying that we are alive, and because in the alive, this form of aliveness that we're in now, I'm talking about using this material to recognize the chambers that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So that's all we have for now.
Thank you, Susan. Let's continue reading here, Ivan. For the hungry ghosts will form upon the face of the beloved. I will listen closely to the sounds, keep my attention sharp and clear, clean, not allowing myself to be drawn downward into the 10,000 distractions of organic life. My attention rests firmly on the red aura around the beloved, the primary component of perception. I see the beloved now as an eater of poison, wildly seductive and wickedly compelling, filled by the presence of the Great Mother, surrounded by a swirling halo of rainbow light. The brilliant red dissolving radiation explodes out of the heart of the beloved, penetrating my being. Alongside that explosive red radiation is another light, the soft yellow pathway, leading to the dimension of hungry ghosts. They who are never satisfied. Now, in the story of Tantalus, he was a big player in the pantheon of godlike figures. He wasn't a god. He was born of royal parentage and stuff, and he was invited by some of the big boys to dinner one day. And the gods eat ambrosia and nectar of the gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they eat. Well, Tantalus decided, well, I'm going to take some of this. And actually, I think the myth goes, I'm going to take this and give it, return it to the people, to the humans. No,
Tantalus.
And Tantalus was then put in a position where he was standing in a river, and above him were grapes that he could eat. And every time he reached up for the grapes, they were just beyond his ability to grab them. And when he would get thirsty, he'd reach down to get some, and the water would recede away from him. Now, we say, yeah, well, that's that guy. We are the hungry ghost technology is almost as pervasive as the ego. It's around us constantly. It'll take a different form for each of us. For some of us, it'll take the form of sensual pleasure. Some it'll be food. Some it'll be, I see these people running, you know, the
runners,
you know, oh yeah, I did my 5 miles
just
today.
Long distance runners,
and they get that feeling about it. Some will be study. You know, the hunger to be a scholarly, you know, noted scholar. And as Trungpa, he also says, and it happens with the spiritual people too.
Yeah, spiritual materialism.
And he goes on and on about spiritual materialism.
Yeah.
And I remember meetings that we had here where individuals would talk each other with the, you know, well, I had this experience, and oh, well, I saw this, and it was a purple light, and it was it was so intense, I couldn't barely, and on and on and on and on. All of that is materialism, and it is hunger in different forms. I don't know that you can get away from hunger as such, but you can recognize it for what it is. Some people, you see these monks and nuns and stuff like that, and they go, oh, well, you know, I'm a monk. I don't have any hungers. I'm just here in my little cell. But, you know, I'm supposed to get a piece of bread and butter at 8 a.m., and I really, really need that. That's supposed to come to me.
I need that. Yeah, right.
So the power of the hunger doesn't change. The nature of it changes. That's all. So as you walk through your day and you're being read to, think of this, not as you're reading to somebody, and not that this is a text about the hungry ghost, or, oh, we all know that. But how does hunger works in every single one of us here? Mm-hmm. You know, we all have our little private hungers that we go through. And we don't want to share them with anybody because we're afraid to, because we don't want to be embarrassed. You know, I've shared the thing about the donut a number of times where at this particular moment, I don't have a donut on my shelf, but I, you know, I'm like, I will have worked hard, or maybe I'll think I really put in a lot of effort in a class like this, and then I'll go get a donut. I deserve it.
You reward yourself.
I reward myself with a donut. Or maybe it's a movie. So it's the power of that hunger, not as necessarily how it manifests. So, but
so
I'm not saying...
You're hungry for the reward, not for the actual item.
Yeah, and in that case, as you know, as I've told you before, you know, I didn't even eat the thing, but I deserved it. I deserved a certain kind of, I wanted a certain kind of adulation. I wanted to be confirmed, right? I wanted a pat on the back. Like Dan will tell me, you know, there's 10 people online, or 15 people. And I have ego, I have a hunger ego about that. And I do. And that's how the darn thing works. Now, the problem with it has to do with obscurations from desire and stinginess may have placed me in a condition of helplessness and awe. Too weak to resist the urge to hide and run. So at this level of our recognition, when we look at the various hungers that we are surrounded by, maybe it's the hunger that you have because of your personal lifestyle. You know, you need a particular size home. And you have to have a particular type of car, and maybe the latest cell phone permutation. And it'll take a different form from each of us. I'm not saying at this moment to change that, but what I'm suggesting is this chamber starts to say, you know what? If you don't recognize that, you're going to be obscured. From what to do next. Okay? Where were we?
We do have a comment.
Go ahead.
Help Lady.
Yes.
Says the life we live here is a mirror to the voyage we will have done during we will have during death. Thus a voyager, no matter where we are.
We are a voyager no matter where we are. This is, everybody should read that and underline it. And it's a very important point. We are exhibiting our destiny right now.
And it's another way of saying it is, we are voyaging through these chambers, whether we are sensing it or not, whether we're acknowledging it or not.
Or whether we have bodies or not.
Yeah.
But right now we do have a body. Right now we do have a body, and our body is exemplifying our particular signature as a voyager. This is how it is. Oddly enough, interestingly enough, the people that are here are here. Okay? That's part of it, is that they happen to be here at this event or at the class tomorrow morning or Thursday night or Sunday morning or whatever it is. Okay?
Well, this is, they have said numerous times that those, the orbs, running these orbs and, you know, the games and the simulations that he's creating in cyberspace have radiations, you know, are exposing us to radiations. In other words, there's, just as we could say that, I'm not sure if this is what you're saying, but this is, there is some sort of radiation involved with us.
Yes.
Gathering in this circle.
Yes.
At this time, weekly.
Being in this group together.
But to
That's
have
right.
this
system.
Gathering, there is a, I believe there is a radiation involved in this.
This is like
a... Even when you bring yourself to make a phone call that you're afraid to make, or you're not thinking that you're worthy, are you then putting the radiations on yourself? Because you're allowing yourself to burn and do it anyway.
Well, if you actually make the call, in a case like that, then it's not that you're putting the radiation on yourself, you're putting yourself in a position where you know it's going to happen. So you're the somewhat the cause of it, but it's the space that you are willing to get into. That's where the cleansing radiation. And this is what we want to talk about here as we go on here in the reading. So I cannot rid myself of the need to hold on to my attachments. I will feel warmly attracted to the soft yellow light. Ah, which will seem to be a safe haven from the brilliant red radiation. I must not allow myself to be drawn to the soft yellow light while at the same time allowing my tendency toward attachment, possessiveness to be dissolved in the cleansing radiation, resigning myself to freedom from desire, thus allowing my uncumbered self to become engulfed inseparably into the void. If I find myself unable to allow myself to be cleansed in this way, then I can concentrate my attention in this manner. This is the dissolving radiation. There you go. There's the answer, Susan. This is the dissolving radiation. And even if I succeed in avoiding it now, it will always be with me wherever I go and will always be facing me when I return this way again. Therefore, I won't allow myself to be drawn down into the soft yellow light, the path leading to the dimension of the hungry ghost. So that's the general dichotomy that this guide is giving us. He's saying there's the soft yellow light of the attachments the powerful attachments that we have versus the cleansing radiation that dissolves some of that. So if we can just put ourselves in the dissolving radiation every so often, you're making a vote for the good guys. You know, I had this thing, I've got to look it up. It's really a fine quote from Spinoza where, you know, he's basically talking about, okay, look, you're going to do these temporal things or you're going to do these eternal things.
Right.
And he's like struggling with all this and he's thinking it through and he goes, well, what should you do? What should I do? And he goes, I finally resolved, he says, to spend more time. It's like he's indicating that every time you go into the eternality of things, you're placing a deposit in the essence bank. Can you do it for just a moment then? And I know some people have disciplines where they're working in this regard. Can you make a deposit in the essence bank? And when you do, it comes back to you in the form of interest. You earn interest. And there's a double way of looking at the word interest here. One is the earnings that we talk about from a bank earning.
Right. New numbers.
But as you develop more time in the essential self, you also become interested in it. You become more interested in it.
And you become more comfortable standing in it and burning in it.
And you're willing to burn in it because you understand the nature of the red dissolving radiation because you know it's for the eventual good of your eternality.
And there are a couple more comments.
Okay, go ahead.
Hawk Lady said, if we are sleepwalking here, we will be sleepwalking during the death voyage as well. Is it important to know the chambers here and now?
Yes. Now, that's a tough question. It's a tough question. Go ahead.
I'm interested in this use of interest. You know, you're talking about the, let's say, the ability of our attention or our actually part of our emotional being, let's say higher emotions or whatever emotional centrum, to be drawn towards these cleansing, you know, the harsher, more cleansing radiations. I'm noticing, you know, something that we talked about last week was this idea of paths that the language in these chambers tells you not only what to expect or what you encounter or how you identify that chamber, but it also is providing you with the tools to use in that chamber, what it is that you need to do as a voyager.
Pretty straightforward.
As opposed to a mechanical, let's say, as opposed to a human or a mechanical being. But I was noticing that this, some of the language that you just read, this statement, which is in the new book, it's at the bottom of 87 and the top of 88, but I must not allow myself to be drawn into the soft yellow light, right? While at the same time allowing my tendencies toward attachment and possessiveness to be dissolved in the cleansing radiation, again, that's pretty straightforward, resigning myself to freedom from desire. Okay, so if freedom from desire is like a great goal, like a great thing, I mean, don't you want freedom from desire?
I don't know. I mean, I like
maybe I don't know.
I like a Big Mac as much as the next guy.
But I'm saying, it as from the voyager point of view, let's say in the expanded state or whatever, as a voyager, I should be happy to have freedom from desire. But this instruction is saying resigning myself from desire. So what self is that that needs to be resigned? If I'm resigning myself.
Okay. This is not theory. This is not theory. What we're talking about here is the actual day-to-day life of the voyager.
Well, this is what I'm thinking, is that the instruction is telling me that there's a persona, there's a me,
yes.
There's a me that is resisting this cleansing radiation. So to that resistant persona, or what would you call it, to what's obscuring or digging in its claws, the instruction is saying, resign myself to accepting liberation. Resign myself to being cleansed of that desire.
Okay. But the difficulty here, and this has something to do with what Mark said a few weeks ago, the difficulty here is we don't know what it means. We don't know what it means to be free from desire.
It says in the rest of that passage, it says it's allowing my unencumbered self.
We have almost no concept of what it means to merge with the void. We read that and we go, oh yeah, I kind of want that.
Unencumbered self to become engulfed. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I want that.
Well,
I think that would be groovy. I'd like to tell my girlfriends and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that
sure. Yeah.
I'm like an unencumbered guy here.
That's very hip, right? To be my unencumbered self.
Yeah.
Okay.
Freedom from donuts. She's suggesting that I develop a freedom from donuts.
Freedom from donuts.
I'm taking it as aimed at me.
There are a few more comments.
The point of it is that we almost don't know what it means to stand in these places, to give up the desires of the human biological machine is almost impossible. It is so far from our consciousness to believe it. I was going to read a whole thing that Marvette wrote in The Prosperity Path.
You want to take the comments first?
No, I'm not going to read this right at the moment.
Yeah.
This is not something where you can say, oh, yeah, now I'm... I think I will be free from desires.
Well, I'm going to resign myself.
I'm going to go ahead.
I resign myself.
This is an enormously complicated thing, enormously difficult to do. And where you start is the desires that you can recognize today. And how do you recognize them? It says something about the soft yellow light. I will not be drawn into that. So can you look around? How does it work for you? You get into your car and you go, you know, I got a pretty groovy car here. I mean, it has that big Prius, you know, a real beautiful Prius. And he sits in the thing and his ego goes, man, I've got this Prius and I'm saving gas, saving money. He's got money issue.
It's a virtuous car.
It's a virtuous car, therefore he's virtuous.
There you go, that's right.
Well, he is virtuous, but not for that reason, by the way. So how do you give up that, the power of that desire and the power of it? How do you do it? You've got to start by recognizing it. And right now, we don't know how to recognize it. So the ultimate conundrum here of struggling to give up desire, that's a huge mountain to climb. And you have to recognize it as such. But guess what? We can do something.
Yeah,
that's all I want to say.
My desire for oatmeal or something.
Yeah, or in my case, steak and eggs and donuts every morning. So go ahead, Susan.
Okay. Huff Lady said, thank you. The puzzle pieces are coming together. Amen.
Good.
And then 108 repetitions says, hydrogen equals life hot equals carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen in your heart blood. Surrealistic movie. And the person goes on to say, Simon mentioned dissolving radiation.
Yes.
And
yeah.
108 repetitions comes back and says, the fifth octave fa, electron molecule.
Those are technical Gurdjieffian terms.
Oh, okay.
And we understand that and we appreciate that, but we're trying to work with, there's too much technology behind those. I think Silverdale may be able to work with that, but some of us aren't schooled in that manner. So what we're working with is just simply, what does dissolving radiation mean to you, and how does it work in your desires that are going to come up, that are coming up right now, and that are going to come up, like, what is your hunger signature right now, and how is it manifesting? That's something you can discuss right now with yourself in an in personal observation. And if you have the opportunity to work literally with another, walk the earth with another voyager that you're working with, hand in hand, you walk down and you go, and confess, in a sense, confess your hungers right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous effect. It's an incredible effect to do that. Funny too. It's actually humorous. It's really funny. But it's an exercise you can do with another. This is why group work is important, and it's important to work with others physically in combination. Get together with somebody in your city that is working there and say, let's go on a Voyager outing. Be kind to one another. Begin to work together. Most of us, most of the time, are alone. And this is an opportunity to begin to develop a collaborative work ethic. And if you can't get together, you live some really, really weird place like Toronto, and there's not even another human being in Toronto.
The wilderness, yeah.
The wilderness of Toronto. Call somebody. And if you have a weird phone thing, call them on Skype. Get in connection with each other and declare your day one to another. And suddenly the day will have a sheen of magic to it. How are we doing, Ivan?
Thinking about red.
If I become attached to the soft yellow light and I'm drawn into it, I will be born into the dimension of hunger ghosts and experience unbearable hunger and thirst. No matter how I fulfill myself there, I will never be satisfied. I will be continually hungry and at the same time full. I won't have an opportunity to attain liberation in this condition. So that's obviously an obstruction on the path. I can let go of habits and tendencies to have things and accumulate and hold on to possessions and allow the brilliant red light to do its work, to draw me away from the dimension of the hungry ghost. That's something we can do today. We can do it in a small way. And when you're driving home to the 35, And you have this hunger for things to be a certain way in your car, and a certain way like this, and a certain way like that. I'm not saying to change anything. But place the beauty of observation on it. Something happens. It'll change at that moment. And then you can say, as it says, we don't have Michelle here, but we can say in Practical Work, where it says, and I am not that.
And we do have a good comment.
Go ahead.
Gnostic Man says, sharing one's hunger reminds me of the idea of confession in Christian churches.
It is.
Sharing hunger seems like a step towards understanding what it means to give up hunger.
the Catholic Church had a tough, tough job. How do you communicate, and I say this to everybody here, I say it to everybody online, how do you communicate this information effectively to people? How do you get it out there? How do you actually get it out to people? And so they developed this whole process. And part of it is, as Gnostic Man is telling us, the confessional. I have a whole bunch of stories about confession and going to confession, which we all
right. He says in the moment of confessing, there is a relief, and in that instant we can experience that desireless state.
Okay, so the act of confession can be achieved individual by individual with each other. Can you confess, Gnostic Man? Can you confess to Gail about what you need to confess to her about, and can she then confess to you? That's the kind of work we're talking about here. That is real. It's alive. It's not morbid. You're right, because the other side of it is this freedom that occurs, and you feel it right then. You can sense it right then. We were looking for the big grand slam home run. You know, I gave up this, and then suddenly, you know, you're enlightened. It's not how it works. We're on the path of gradualism, and that's an okay thing.
When I have a comment.
Go ahead.
When Harry and I were doing the reading, we were talking about burning in the radiation.
Yeah.
And I kept having things come up as he was reading to me about, like, authority figures and bosses. And I confessed to him this time where I had done something wrong at work. And I had to go sit with the big boss and burn in the radiation and deal with what I had done. And the fact of going through and confessing it to Harry was very freeing. And so,
yeah, in an experience like that, when you're with the boss, you can convert the entire experience to a moment of freedom. Because you might have screwed up. Let's say you did screw up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you can convert the entire event to a moment of freedom, and guess what? You can convert it to a moment of freedom for you and the individual and the boss.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen, and I've done it.
And you have to make the decision to burn.
Well, no, you have
to actually, and to actually sit there and confess and be willing to. The only word I can think of is burn. Be willing to accept the radiation.
Well, it might be that you would acknowledge that you're willing to accept that you're flawed, or that you are responsible for whatever.
I am.
Whatever that behavior was, you're responsible.
John, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I wasn't there with your boss, so I wouldn't.
Have a whole class on that, Susan.
How flawed I am?
About your flaws, but
right.
Not going to take actually a couple of days. But so right now, so I think the invitation to this chamber, Ivan,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the invitation is, this is the Chamber of the Hungry Ghost, and guess what, kids? That's what we are. We are enmeshed in that world. But the invitation here is we don't have to always be enmeshed in it. We'll clear the rest of it next week. We'll go back over this. So during this week, if you have the opportunity to read this chapter one to another again to do it as the Voyager, then when you're being read to this, it's not a matter of like, not just a matter of hearing it well and getting it right, but knowing that you're getting instruction that you need to use.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be, you need to change to rebuild the carburetor. So if you really need to do it, you need to know how to do it. Not a theory. So if you're getting the instruction, you listen as if you're receiving the instruction, because you're going to need to use it. Go out in the world. That is the exercise. Go out in the world, see what happens, and bring back what you discovered for next week. And we'll continue on the 7th, and we'll get into 8 and 9 rapidly after that.
Can you clarify that?
The exercise?
Go out and collect.
Okay.
What is the exercise?
Here's the exercise. You're going to read this at Chamber 7, right? Someone's going to read to you, and they're going to read stuff like, you've got to get it. Not the 8th chamber, 7th chamber. If I still feel possessive and attached, as I was conditioned to feel in the human primate life, I may be afraid to allow the dazzling red light to dissolve my habits. So you're getting this data, right? Go out into the world then, or whatever you're going to do, and notice, how does this manifest? When do you follow the soft yellow light? It may not be a soft yellow light, okay? That's the nature of it. When do you fall into the habits of possessiveness in the hungry ghost world?
Something desire, driven by desire.
Where are you driven by desire? And you're obscured because of your desire, because you've got to watch your TV show tonight. I can't go because my show is on. I love it when I hear that. I can't quite conceive of it, but I hear people say that. You know, my show is on.
Yeah, I know.
What, you're the producer or what?
Law and Order, yeah.
My show is on. That's what I mean. So if you can bring yourself to a point where you can denote these events, that's what I'm looking for. And let's see if we can do that. Take it out on the road. And if you're fortunate enough to be with somebody next to you that you can work with, go out together with them. Does that make sense, Susan?
Yes.
Excellent.
I'm not going to read this next week. It's a bit late.
I'm going to read it. It'll take 1 minute.
Okay, I'm in time.
Timing. This is from the HBM, Human Biological Machine is a Transformation of It. So the waking state is the true remembrance of the self that I, as God the Absolute, which is beyond description, beyond godness, beyond absoluteness. Tag, you're it. That's what God grabbed me more of it. When you've been tagged, you accept the tag, you have to tag yourself, you tag yourself as it. All right. And when you do that, you assume responsibility for godness. This is a huge thing. I said it before, but I want to make sure that you understood that clearly. That you accept the responsibility for godness. We're in training, teammates. We're in training to accept that responsibility. Everything constitutes repetition. The whole thing in accepting responsibility in this method is accepting the fact that something's going to happen over and over and over and over again. Many such things. You're actually going to have a whole plethora, a whole grouping, a bunch. You'll be grabbing hold of the fasces, the bundle of arrows, which represents your acceptance of these responsibility loops. And that's the concept. It's the responsibility loop So put in your concept that you're being led to partly because you got a responsibility here. And the responsibility has to do with accepting this idea of godness when you go out. And if you can't do it half-assed, and you can't do it new agey, and you can't go, gosh, I'm God, so you're God. No, you got to work with giving up your desires, and when you're in the moment of the cleansing radiation, that's when you can say yes. That's all. How'd I do?
2 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's because it's
we'll excuse you.
I don't know. You know where it is?
What chapter? Chapter?
Oh, it's in the introduction.
Page 35 and 36.
Roman numerals
35 and 36.
Yeah.
So that's the much newer piece. This was a talk. That actually is a talk that E.J. gave.
Oh.
Much more recently than the original.
Yeah. These are not in order, by the way. I just picked certain ones that I wanted to read.
I have another question.
And there was this idea of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, when we do these readings,
yes.
Starting out with the obligatory prayer.
Okay.
Do we then just go to seven?
Sure. Yeah, that's how it works.
You don't...
No, that's the way individual chambers are read.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do... But you always do the obligatory prayer.
It's in essence how you open the space.
And the way Harry and I have been doing it is we read it simultaneously.
That's okay. That's what we want. We people experiment and what works best for you.
I've been taking us back each time to like the readings 1 through 5.
I know you have. That's because that's really important to you.
Right.
Okay, so you need to keep working with that, but that's not this exercise. But don't not do it. That's important to you. You've said that several times now.
Right.
There's something you're going to get from that particular, those are the symptoms, Susan.
Right.
They're very important.
I guess. They are, especially important right now.
They are. So go with it, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Get some depth with it. Thank you, everybody.
All right.
We'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for showing up.
Yeah.
Thank you for showing up.